we recorded the entire record practically in the dark. Like whenever you got somewhere creatively where you felt like it was finished and someone grabbed this remote and hit red from blue to red, that was literally their like calling sign of like, we're over, we're done, we did it. So we would just be in the dark, all red, monitors turned all the way up, and we're just listening. And it's like, we're not working anymore. We're reflecting. And I feel like with Pneumonia and kind of wrapping up this whole series, like we should be reflecting, not still working.
It was probably the most weird special day of the whole record process was the day we wrote that song. It wasn't even for the main capture. This was neck deep in the pandemic too. It was 2020. I don't want to give away like the spoiler in the middle because it kind of, so we basically, it was like a Wednesday, I think, because we, the four of us, me, Aaron, Spee, and Tim, tied one on a little bit at the food store the night before, King State. We had some drinks the night before and it was a real good time. So we were all feeling it the next morning. But I was thinking about it today. Aaron and Spee came in with a beat and a tempo. Like they wanted a certain feel. They had no melody. They had no nothing. They were just like, what if there was a song that was just like, boom, bah. And so they were just like, tap that out. What is that? And so at 90 BPM, so we just started right there. And we literally had Aaron go record that beat to nothing, just a click. I pretty much just backed off and just kind of like engineered until the idea started to present itself, like what this could turn into. And Aaron downloads a synth plugin, a free one, a Tyrell. It's by Audio Something, Audio Sweeter, UE. And he just holds like a G sharp and he's just single note, boom, like that note that's in the bridge. Mm-hmm. That was the beginning of the song. So it just started off with that and the beat. And if I remember correctly, they just started cooking up just a melody. Aaron started coming up with these changes in his head with the do 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 ba-ma, just singing the verse, basically. It was like, whoa. And I do remember at one point I was like, Aaron, let me see that piano real quick, and played that first thing is literally the first take of boom, boom, the piano, boom, yeah. Boom, boom. And right when that happened, Aaron goes, whoa, he like screamed. He was like, there you go. That's the beginning. And that became the verse. And then like Tim got there. He was running late because like I said, the night before we were all kind of like scattered, but being productive. It was just wild. I remember it was dark room. I had my sunglasses on. It was just one of those, like you're hungover, but you're just in it and you're just in it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that song just eventually, like Tim got there, heard it and is like, whoa. And so we spend the whole day we arranged the whole thing. So like all three of those sections, like we got them out and we knew we had space. So we just like threw that one note in there and just like said X amount of time. And then what's the next riff? Speed came up with the boom, da, boom, bow, which gets you to the next section. So there's like that tempo change there. All of this happened. It was just all of us, all four of us in the room, just bam in this, just writing this thing.
This one was two songs in a way. So it was the, you know, that like kind of Deftones digital bath thing that I think I had just put down just that. And then I had this like loop of like this digital noise that I put underneath it. And then we started building. So like the roads that you hear in the beginning of the song, you could say I'm lost, that half of the song, I call it, I put it into halves, right? So that first half, that roads that's there, is from the demo version. JJ actually played that roads because I had tried to like, I was like, what if it was like an electric piano type thing? And I had tried to play and it was so, I suck at piano. So, but I can like pick, you know, church pick, you know? So I had like, so he came and kind of played it and we ended up keeping it. And at the time, if my memory serves me right, the song wasn't about anything. You know, we were just making this like, I think we had said something like, let's just make something that's like instrumental and long and like, and then we got to the end like of that section, which was still only really one section. And it was like, where does it go? And there was this whole talk of like, let's make it heavy, but like how? And it didn't feel right to like make it heavy there. So I, that like that Juno noise thing, I put that there in the demo. And that's the version you still, that's what you still hear today.
We staged the week in a really interesting way where it's like, let's try something like this and try something like this and try something like this. And then the day of the 22nd in September of 2020, we were going to write something angry or like weird. And I was like, that makes so much sense to me. Like, let's just keep with that. And all of a sudden it's like, well, what if we started this like melodic thing? And I was like, I have nothing pretty to offer. And like Aaron was playing stuff and it was great. And everyone was vibing and I was just sitting literally in this couch back here. And I was like, I can't feel what you're playing. Spencer grabbed the baritone, ended up writing, you know, the beginning of most of the parts that are clean. And JJ jumped in, our engineer and co-producer. And he was working on piano and organ, and Spencer and him were working all these weird phrasings. And we kind of just kept going and I was kind of checked out.
It just happens. And I think that those are the sort of things that you can't really even put your finger on. But then when you listen to the end product, you're just like, man, like that just happened. You know, if you want to call that, you know, the song, you know, that the artist getting out of the way of the song, or if you want to call it, you know, the universe doing its thing, or if you want to call it God, you know, doing what he wants to do, you know, whatever that thing is, you know, I look at a song like this and I just think, yeah, like we just allowed it to happen, you know?
Never once were we like, we should shorten this, or, you know, maybe we should like make it a 3-minute song and like trim all the stuff out. It was just like, whatever the song needs to do, it does. And it kind of like just took on its own life. It was really wild thinking back on it. It's just how it evolved into this thing.
Leave that night, and me and Tim are just like chilling, having some beers, like chatting about the song that we just wrote. It was like, what did we just do? The song's like 7.5 minutes. What is this song? And Tim looks at me, goes, dude, today is the day, a year ago today, my dad died.
So in 2019, my dad died, he was battling cancer for a couple of years and then got better, got home, started feeling worse, went back for a few treatments. I was on tour. We were overseas, I believe, at the time. And dad's coming home in 2 weeks. I got home a few days later. It's like, dad's not leaving. Come say goodbye. And it just all happened like that. And, you know, to save like a gruesome, self-interested sob story, like he was there and then he wasn't. And he died on September 22nd. And then you move forward, September 22nd, 2020, we're in the room. We're in this room.
He didn't tell us at all. He didn't tell anybody until they left. He told me. And I was like, holy shit, dude.
We kind of just kept going and I was kind of checked out and I felt really bad. And I ended up texting all the dudes in the studio that night going, yo, if I was off today, I apologize. It's, you know, my dad's 1 year anniversary of dying and I was just in a weird funk. I apologize. I owe you guys more. I'll show up tomorrow. And that kind of started a snowball of awareness of the date and then awareness of why that song was so disheveled and kind of chaotic, which is, you know, like Richard, like Gary, my dad, you know, death is chaotic. And then that kind of set the tone for the next 2 years of what pneumonia would be.
Everything, this all makes so much sense. Like there's a reason for this, like in this place at Watermark, like we've had a number of close friends, like dads pass away and that's the place of their funerals. So we've all been in that room together mourning the loss of like incredibly influential people in all of our lives. And unbeknownst to three people in that room that day, we basically, in a way, it's like a, it's just a tip of the hat to those people that we've lost and just like having, it was like a way to deal, you know. It was definitely a cope for Tim. It was the expression of like how he felt, you know, but it was wild. Like I loved how organic it was that we didn't know. Cause I don't think that it would have, if we would have known, we would have tried too hard.
It's a wild song. Like, and it only has one emotion for me, like singular emotion. And that's just, it's just heavy.
You know, the skeleton of the song is, you know, what ended up being on the record. And, you know, it is a very sprawling, wide open song. And it's, you know, it's heavy emotionally, which I just love that stuff. Like I love, like even just, you know, musically, not even dealing with the lyrics, but it's wide open and it feels heavy emotionally. Like it feels sad and it just, there's an ache to it, which that's like my favorite stuff.
It's a song about death. It's not fun. It doesn't wrap up. Nobody's walking through pearly gates. It's just the sadness of death. And like, let's sit there for a minute and then maybe we can recapture some sort of light at the other end of the tunnel later. I don't know. But that was a big rub. It's like, how do we end it? We want to end the record on such a depressing note. You know, I drift into the brightest black, no way back. Like, yeah, kind of. That's insofar that we know it, what has happened. When we get to the other side, maybe we'll send like some sort of heavenly MP3 down and readjust the notes. But that's how it feels. That's the real shit, you know? And I think that's really important. It's just to be okay with things not being okay. You know, you can cry about it when you're talking to your friend about it or on a podcast about it, but like pick yourself up and like move on. Your dad, your mom, your aunt, your grandma wouldn't want you to just be a blowout. But when you talk about them, like it's okay to cry. It's chill. And you know, I think that's what I want to give people with this song is like, if you want to mourn, like mourn to this song. Yep. Like we can all talk about how dark death is. We can all talk about how people are left alone after death. But the good news is like, they're asleep. You know, this is our thing. It's not their thing. Like they're chilling. Right. So I think that's really important.
We were all terrified to touch it because we didn't want to mess it up. It was one of those. It was like, maybe that was just that moment in time. Like sometimes you wonder if you, when you go to try to recreate it, it just like ruins it sometimes. So we were scared of doing that.
we did the demo, and I loved the way the drum loop, if you will, felt. I was like, I'm not going to put a bunch of fills in here, like only really small section marking things. Recorded it. We did the song, went home for a month or whatever, came back to like actually record the drums or whatever, and I couldn't do it. And it's like sounds really simple, but there's all these ghost notes and stuff, you know, if you listen to it. And I was like overplaying the hi-hat.
I was like, dude, you can't do that. Like it, you have to like, we're literally going to go open the other session and you got to like reference what you did. And you're like, we need to try to like, I know you can do it. You just need to like go back there. Like, this is what you do, dude. Like a little bit of a pep talk, you know, and it just took a lot and he got frustrated. Hi-hat turned inside out. Like he was beating it because we were like, dude, you're not getting it. You're not getting it. And he got mad as a hornet and was like, just started doing his thing. And it like flipped the hi-hat inside out. And we were like, oh no. I was like, buddy, come on, let's take a five. Go downstairs. Come with me. Rowdy, go in there, fix that cymbal, Rowds. Rowds goes in there, gets to work. Me and Aaron go downstairs. I'm like, look, you're gonna push through this. It's gonna be all right. Like, just trust me, trust us in the room. You can do this. Like, you will do it. You're gonna do it.
I hit a wall. Like, I couldn't, you have to kind of underplay a loop like that, right? A sort of behind the beat, and it's like real like lazy. And I just couldn't, I was playing it very robotically because I'm like, we're doing it for real now, man. It's got to be tight or whatever. And I remember telling JJ, like, fuck it, dude, you're doing it. And he's like, no, I'm not. You're doing it. So it took me like an hour to get into the headspace to like, actually record the song. And I don't know if that's because, like, again, I was trying to be like Mr. Pro drummer or what, but what you feel is, and when you listen to it, it was earned, man.
Until we knew that we could make it again the same way and make it feel like that day did, like it took some work, you know. And there was probably the most bashing of heads over that song, and just like something was trying to come between us to keep that song from happening. And we just had to push through that, you know, like, nah, this song has to be here. And it's worth the fight.
I think all of Under Oath is a reaction. It can't be engineered. It has to just happen. You know, and I feel that way about everything with the band, live shows, all of it. I feel like it has to be just like, it's got to happen. That's why I don't feel like any show is ever the same. You know, we have the same production or whatever, but I feel like it's always different. And so with this song, I really wanted it to feel that way. And it took me a while to get back to, you know, when it was first created.
We didn't set out to make the song about what it is. It started with a few lines that were kind of placeholder while we were demoing, especially like that vocoder part that Aaron sings that's in the pauses on the verses. And that kind of set a little bit in motion. And then we sat down that one of the nights in the Airbnb, and we started having that conversation, like, would it be too soon? Is it fucked up to like write a song about maybe that touches really close to home for Tim and like his dad passing?
We kind of have a weird like community of people that have lost parents, and it's really supportive. It's really cool. It's also really sad sometimes, but we were kind of working through all these songs. And then JJ turns around one day and he's like, what if Seth played on this song? And we knew we had a part that, again, like, I was trying to find something, but I was so in my head about the context. And we were like, let's get Seth in here and just play something in his dad's honor, or maybe even not in his honor, but just something he can grieve with.
This real dear friend of ours, brother of mine, used to be in a band with him called Brother Cephas. And one of the dads that we mentioned, Kent, he is one of the ones that's passed away. And we had a service in that church, and it was like, man, it'd be sick to get one of those dudes on this.
The dudes are like, I don't know. It's like, let's just give it a try. We go out, me, JJ, and Seth only. The dudes are back home. We get drinks. We go out to lunch. We lube him up. We go grab a ton of beer. We come back here. And when he walked in, he's like, I haven't been in this building since my dad's funeral. And it was just this really eerie thing. Seth Davis is one of the most talented guitar players I've ever seen. Like in my real life, like I watched him through this window and he was just drunk with his back facing us, stomping on the ground, just playing. He did like 14 takes straight through. And he came in at a certain point. He's like, boys, that's all I have. And that's what's on the record. No editing, no comping, you did something really cool here. It's like, there was one breath of whatever it is, a minute and a half or 48 seconds, whatever it could be, whatever's on the record. And he just played it. And we told him to come in here and he came in way early. And I almost stopped him and JJ just goes, shut the fuck up. Let him play. And he played. It's good. You know? And that's cool. Like, I love that. To me, it's real special.
In the story of the song, we tried to kind of, me and Aaron kind of tried to make it seem like what it would feel like to be in that situation of not being like Tim or any of the rest of us that have lost a dear friend or a family member, which we all have, but to actually be the one passing.
When we were doing it, it was like, man, what do we think like death sounds like from the person that's going's perspective?
You know, you can be surrounded by your family and your loved ones and all these people when it comes your time, you know, when you die, you know, but you're still by yourself. It's you and your body and you're, you know, fading into the black, you know, or whatever it's like. I've never died. But whatever it's like trying to, you do it by yourself. And whether you believe in God or whether you believe in the devil or whatever the hell you believe in, like, we don't know what that is until it happens, right? And you deal with that by itself. And you can be surrounded by all these people you love and all this good you've done. But when you die, it's just you. It's just you and what you got on your hands. You know what I mean? And I don't know what's there. And I don't think any of us know what's there, but that is the feeling of the end of the song for me, which is like darker than I meant for it to sound. But it's true.
Everyone's going to die. Everyone's going to leave someone behind. Everyone's going to feel lost when they're alive and someone's gone. That's all Pneumonia is. It's the most universal song in the world.
If you ask me personally, you know, I think that God works through music in such powerful ways that you don't even really grasp it a lot. But, you know, there will be times when I'll just be, you know, I'll be walking down a street listening to, you know, some Sigur Rós album or whatever. And like, and you just get these snippets of like, oh, like I understand like what this is like, just, but you only get it for a second, you know? And, you know, and I think that music is really important that way because it really can put, not even into words, but like it can give you a tangible something that you can like look at and listen to and you're like, oh, this is the description of this feeling that I have or this idea that I know about.
It's one of my favorite songs we've ever written. It's such a special song. It's just like, it's like I said earlier, it's like it took on its own life and no one was steering. And I know that sounds super like cheesy, like, you know, spiritual and like, oh, someone else is steering the ship, but it really just kind of like the song did its thing. Like it had its own life and we just kind of followed it. Like we were just working on it. We never really forced it like one way or the other. It just naturally happened over this course of making the record and it ended up being super special.
So I remember the moment that Spencer told me before the lyrics were done, he said, this song is called Pneumonia. And that meant more to me than probably anything that whole record, just him saying that's what it was called.
When Aaron literally said, I think the song should be called Pneumonia, I was like, that's literally on my dad's death certificate what he died from. And he didn't get emotional. He just goes, no shit. It's your dad's song. Like, why do you think I'm calling it that? And it's like, that is so important. For him to just be like, yeah, like nonchalant, like no shit, Sherlock. Like, this is what the song's about now. And it was like, cool. All right, let's roll. You know, I think that's really important, is like the brotherhood that loss brings with a community is really important.
Spencer got to talking to Tim and they were just like, hey, like, you know, this is really hitting that this has that a lot of this echoes, you know, what you were feeling around the time that your dad was passing away and after he died. And then, you know, and people know, you know, Tim has he's got a really good skill for, you know, writing lyrics and having those types of ideas. It's just that in Under Oath, that hasn't really been his place historically. So we got to talk and you know, it was a very simple, like, you know, Aaron and Spencer were like, hey, we think you should write lyrics for this because this is kind of turning into, you know, a song that you can speak most to.
It's the first song in Under Oath history where, you know, Spencer and I sat down with someone and we're like, hey, can you help us do this? You know, because I felt like it wasn't our place. Sort of the ending of that song is like, the song's sort of a story progression loosely, you know, it's not like The Wall or something, but it's like loosely a story progression. And at the end, it's like, you know, it's a person that's passing. And I really wanted Tim to like, write that. So the whole ending, Tim wrote the lyrics for, like from the every bloodline has its own start, which is probably my favorite moment on the record. That bit right before it gets heavy, every bloodline. And Spencer says to this day, he goes, that's my favorite Under Oath. That's my favorite vocal on the record.
He was insanely humbled when the boys asked him to contribute lyrically. Like that's never happened, you know.
Aaron and Spencer sat me down. They're like, yo, can we meet at the food store, which is what we call King State, mine and Nate's bar. And we went to the food store. We were on the patio and they're like, yo, this song is so heady and it's so personal. Like, do you have anything to contribute lyrically? And I was like, go on. They're like, well, we feel like it's ending and we don't know what that end feels like insofar that I remember it. Like, you know, Spencer's dad's still here. Aaron's dad's still here. So they're like, we're trying to wrap up this cosmic theoretical story, but it's actually literal to you. Like, do you have anything to add? And we're not asking you to write it. We're not going to sing whatever you give us. Just do you have anything to contribute? And I was like, yeah, let me think about it. And I walked from our patio to my truck across the parking lot, and I already had a voice note, and I already had lyrics that I pulled from the song that I wrote 2 years previous, thinking my dad was going to die then because he was supposed to.
We just felt like it would be wrong to not involve him in it, you know, like, which was a special moment because, you know, it's always been me and Aaron with the lyrics. And I think something that kind of brought a full circle with the things we've talked a lot about on this podcast, which is trust. And this was actually a moment of like, proves that we've gotten so much further in our career with each other, like, you know, not being a Christian band anymore and standing on the same ground and being able to accept each other. And now we're making our own record and we're trusting one another and we've pushed past the problems and all the, you know, non-communication caused so many problems during this record, where if we just would have talked and so on and so forth, as we get to this end song to where we're like, all that stuff was just a moment, a split second, and we all got through it because we just had to communicate. And here we are like, hey, man, like this does show so much trust in each other that we're like, we've worked on this song. He's not offended. He loves it. And here we are going, we love you and we want you to be a part of this. And he contributed like 4 or 5 lines at the end of the song that he had on his phone that he had written about his dad that we kind of made work into the song, that I don't think anyone else could have written because it did hit so close to home to him, you know?
All of us kind of had a mutual respect for each other's craft, where before I was like, what are you saying? Like, what does that even mean? How do I relate? And then all of a sudden we're dealing with something that I personally experienced. So did Chris, you know, Aaron, Spencer, they've all either seen death or almost experienced death. And it's like, we're dealing with a very common topic. And all of a sudden now we're all on the same page.
The way that this was written, and like, even lyrically, you know, like, what does that look like, you know, going forward? And I hope that it feels the way that this feels, you know, the collaboration process is, I hope that it's like this, you know, minus me spending 2 hours trying to play one drum groove. But
it was so cool to see all of us in the room, certain people never in our band, never will be in our band, just collaborating on an idea. And I feel like Under Oath's been very vague. Like, we've always had like angry songs or happy songs that quote unquote everyone can buy into, but they're so agnostic that everyone buys into them at a very small level. And when we talked to Seth and we're like, dude, we're writing a song about this, and Kent, your dad died and we know his name, we lived life with him, would you be a part of this project? It was like, yes. And we've never had that. We've never had a theme of a song accidentally permeate more people than is in our direct creative circle until Pneumonia. And even half the dudes were uncomfortable with it, I think, at first. They were like, I don't know. Like, I think we could just figure it out on our own. And it's like, Seth has something to say. Let him talk, you know, even if it's with his hands. Like, let him speak, let him be sad with us. And what you hear on the left side of the speaker is Seth.
I'll never forget the first time we played this song. We had talked about it beforehand and we were just like, man, like playing that song is going to be really heavy, you know, because Tim's dad and my stepdad. And like, I just cried the whole time we played it because I was like thinking about my stepdad and like how far I've come since he passed away. And and I think that so much of that feeling stems from when the music was written, like how it felt, like it feels like that.
This song, can't listen to it, mm-hmm. You know, and that's cool. You know, 1 in 20 years, we've written 75 songs or whatever it is. Like, there's 1 in 20 years that just gets your goat. Even live, I'm like, it feels slow motion. I kind of lose myself. And I think that's really important. And what sucks is like most people will never have that. Most people lose a family member or a spouse, child, and have nowhere to put that energy. I'm just really grateful that, you know, Chris, myself, Seth, we have created out what's kind of in a hopefully productive way, even though it's destructive at times, but like we're mourning and that's okay.
think about the effect it'll have on other people, but it did connect, which I'm so happy that it did, because it was important to me and to Tim and to Chris and Aaron. It's very important to us. And we put our hearts into that song and took some risks. And, you know, like, it was even risky writing it, of like, you know, I don't want to make someone upset, you know, or say the wrong thing here or cross any boundaries, but like, we just went for it and we all poured our hearts into that song, and it connected to a lot of people who also think the song's very important. And that's ultra rewarding, you know, and now we're closing with it, which is one of my favorite things. I love that.
Like, the second we wrote it, it was like, this will be the end of the record. It has to be. Especially once we nailed the ending and like really had a, basically with a hardcore ass stomp. Like, that took us a minute to wrench on that, really how to end it. Cause we had riffs and other stuff that was there that we were just like, that's not it. That's not it. That's not it. And then once we finally nailed the boom, boom, bop, boom, boom, bop, bop, boom, 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 very classic Under Oath, but just way heavier. Cause it's drop A, it's baritones, and it's just like super heavy. It's the lowest they've gone, you know, it's the lowest I mean, they've done that in the past, but like that though, where it's full blown insanity. It's like, wow.
There's nothing that can come after this. Like, you can't bring anything back after the end of this song, you know?
We did what we wanted to do. The song's not really, obviously it's not a banger. It's not a single. It's not a thing. We even parked it at the back of the record. Like, it's not meant to be anything aside from what it is. And I feel like if I look at like music and there's a giant bus, like this song is sitting quietly at the back of the bus, and it's only asking for attention when you're able to understand what it is and then start having a conversation with that song.
I've had a lot of time to process it and think about it and see if I would, you know, change things or want to change things. And I wouldn't. I think this, we did exactly what we needed to do at that specific moment in time. I'm not really ashamed of anything, you know, and that's like wild to think, because we've gone through so much crazy shit and ups and downs. And, you know, I've looked at some pictures from the past when I was in a rock bottom and looked like shit, you know, and I'm like, but it was part of my journey. And I think that I'm glad that I can look back at that and go, I never want to be there again. You know, I'm happy. You know, I'm happy where we are right now.
When you hear 3 minutes of a song, like, you don't understand the hours and the days that went into conceptualizing that. And so I think what we've done on this podcast is really illuminate the intention, and whether we missed or we nailed, that's up to the viewer or the listener. But I love the idea of being able to like tell a more detailed story of song by song, and as a unit, how Under Oath has grown from where we were to where we are and where we're going. And I think if anything, this podcast series shows where we're going, which is further together and building on the bridges and or the walls we've torn down or built during the session, you know? We still have the White Claw unopened. It's here. It'll never leave. This is an altar to something. We don't even know what.
The fact that we were able to do this thing ourselves the way that we wanted, and we were happy with it. We are happy with it. Extremely, and people like it, and we get out on a stage and people are banging their heads or crying. That's just like, that's what it's all about, you know. It's crazy.
Well, everybody, this is the end of the series, and I hope you have enjoyed it as much as I have. For me, doing a deep dive and really looking at something in detail and spending hours and hours on it is the way that I learn and grow. And I have a lot of gratitude that Under Oath let me under the hood, so to speak, to explore, because it's my opinion that they're a very special group, not only just in the music that they make itself, but the method and the pursuit and the team and the collaboration skills are at a high level and have evolved over time. I believe it really applies to all kinds of collaborations and work and hobbies and families. And I think there's tons of takeaways from it. And it's really great to get a picture of the Under Oath machine and how it works and how it's more than the sum of the parts. I guess that's the takeaways for me. But thank you guys for listening to this so much. Stay tuned. There'll be some more stuff and development for this feed of deep dives. It's not over. Not exactly sure what's next and when, but just keep this feed subscribed and we'll do some more deep explorations on things soon enough. Under Oath is playing Rocklahoma on September 2nd, Blue Ridge Rock Fest on September 9th in Virginia, and Discovery Park in Sacramento on October 9th, and also on the Emo's Not Dead cruise this November, so check them out there. And also, if you're curious to see Aaron Gillespie, he's on Labeled Fest playing the whole Almost album, Southern Weather, front to back. That's along with Norma Jean, Emery, O Sleeper, and Salt Creek in September in Texas. And those tickets are at labeleduniverse.com. So come out and check that out. Labeled Deep Dives is produced by Matt Carter. That's me. And it's created by Ray Harkins and I. The editing and visual direction are done by Life Thomason. Sound design and additional editing by Seth Thompson. Our production manager is Katie Franson, along with Randy Nichols and Nicole Botterin. The brand and designer by Joel Buchelman. Web, social media, and archive by Marshall Frimuth. Additional support from Andrew Maloney, Kermit T. Stevenson III, Adam Scatula, Jim Worthen, and Tyson Paletti. See you guys soon.
Record was supposed to come out, I forget when it was, but it was like July or August or something like that, and it kept getting delayed, and in turn all of these rollouts that we have keep going from like, oh, we're gonna do this week one, week four, week six, and then record, it's like week one, week five, week nine, week whatever, and then record. So the rollout's starting, but the release date keeps kind of moving internally, even though nothing's hit public yet. And Pneumonia was one of the singles, or not even a single. Pneumonia was one of the songs that we're going to release. And I remember calling either Nicole or Randy and going, yo, if Pneumonia is coming out somewhere in September, October, like what date is it coming out with? What date is it coming out on? And they said, well, the label picks September 22nd. Which is the same day that my dad died and the same day we started the song. And the same day you released the song, you know? And I called Chris bawling. I was like, bro, I don't know what's happening, but like something is happening. It's really fucking cool. You know, it wasn't like anyone remembered. It wasn't like anyone in the band planned it insofar that I know. It was just, oh, the label kept delaying 2, 3, 4 months. And now Pneumonia comes out on September 22nd. And then I'm like, fuck. It's pretty cool.